Hey there, teacher friends. Listen, small group learning for literacy doesn't have to feel chaotic. It doesn't have to feel overwhelming, like you're trying to always find new activities and things to do with the kids. No, no. My year-long literacy support bundle includes everything you will need for the entire year of literacy small groups. I'm talking phonics games, decodable readers, writing support, comprehension activities, so much more, all designed to grow with your students throughout the year. Instead of buying separate resources and piecemealing it all together throughout the year, you get everything in one bundle, saving money and giving you ready-to-use materials whenever your group is ready to shift into the next skill level. Grab it now and you will thank yourself later. Hey, teacher friends, it's Ziba from Kindergarten Cafe. And today on the podcast, I have a guest. Her name is Melanie, and she is the podcast host of Phonics Rules for Kids. And she is a core literacy classroom teacher. She's taught K through 3, and now she specifically works with parents, helping them teach simple phonics skills at home so that their kids can become strong, confident readers. She has created her own printable phonics curriculum and phonics skills tutorials for parents so that parents can teach their kids to read without overwhelm or tears in 17 minutes or less per day. So if you are looking for some phonics tips and tricks and also some thoughtful reflection on our teaching process that we have both had, so let's dive in. You're listening to the Kindergarten Cafe podcast, where kindergarten teachers come to learn classroom-tested tips and tricks and teaching ideas they can use in their classroom right away. I'm Ziba, creator and founder of Kindergarten Cafe, and I help kindergarten teachers with everything they need from arrival to dismissal in order to save time, work smarter, not harder, and support students with engaging and purposeful lessons. I'm here to cheer you on through your successes and breakthroughs and offer support and resources so you never have to feel stuck or alone. Ready to start saving time and reducing your stress, all while using effective and purposeful lessons that students love? Let's get started. Hey everyone, I am here today with Melanie from the Phonics Rules for Kids podcast. Melanie is a phonics coach for moms, and I'm really excited to have her expertise on here to help us talk and learn a little bit more about phonics instruction. I know that's a big question a lot of people have. So, Melanie, welcome to the podcast. And if you want to introduce yourself a little bit more to my audience, that'd be great.
Hi, Ziba. Thank you so much for having me on your Kindergarten Cafe podcast. I'm delighted to be here. So, as Ziba, you said, my name is Melanie Jeffrey. I am a former full-time kindergarten through third grade Ontario public elementary teacher turned online phonics coach. And I help primarily moms teach their kiddos to read by teaching them simple phonics skills that they can put on rinse and repeat for their kiddos at home. So, yeah.
Awesome. And before you are doing what you're doing now, you were a kindergarten teacher.
Yes, and absolutely loved what I did. I've been teaching kindergarten through third grade. Most of those years were spent in kindergarten teaching core phonics skills for beginning readers. So pre-K, right? 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, and then into the early 6-year-olds. So I have seen how simple phonics skills and simple sounds, simple relationships have allowed and enabled children to read simple words. If a child can read a word, they can read a sentence. And it was just so exciting for me to see their progress from, you know, singing the alphabet song to being able to read a simple text and a simple story on a page using the skills that we've taught them and just expecting them to be able to read what we'd actually taught them, not asking them to guess at words that we didn't know. So I've just seen the power and the value of simple and direct phonics instruction for early readers in the classroom.
Yes. First of all, kindergarten is the best. So I agree with you. But that's that kindergarten magic that I talk about on the podcast all the time. That's the magic right there, is seeing the kids go from learning the letters to putting them together to read a sentence, seeing it click for them. Like, you can, until you've taught kindergarten, I don't think you understand that you can literally see the click happen. You can see the light bulb go off. And I've taught K through third grade, and there's just no other grade that has that kind of growth in it. It's just incredible. And you're mentioning, you know, the wanting kids to use strategies that we've taught them of sounding out the words. I think a lot of people, a lot of teachers are in their own stages of a journey of understanding the best way to teach kids how to read and switching maybe how they've done reading. I know I've switched how I've been teaching reading. I started reading teaching kids how to guess. And when I learned the power of phonics and systematic phonics instruction, to see the difference in my students has been incredible and makes me sad for, you know, all those years of teaching kids to guess. But looking back on it, I was so frustrated doing an assessment when the kids would guess and I'd be like, oh, you're just guessing. Why? Well, I literally taught them to do that. So I don't know if you want to talk about your journey through all of that.
Yes. And Ziba, I was the same. I was exactly the same. For newer teachers listening, I was taught to teach children to read using the whole language system or the balanced literacy system. If we expose children, new readers, to enough text, if we expose them to enough, you know, vocabulary on the walls, that they would be able to read. And really, that system is a form of guessing, as you mentioned. And, you know, at the beginning, it seems to work somewhat okay, right? It seems like these children were able to read the text because those simple pattern texts are so simple.
And the pictures.
So
makes
sense. And it was, and it was all based on the cueing system. Oh, look at the first letter of the word. What is, look at the picture. And when you think of those simple pattern texts, I like to jump. I like to kick. I like to throw, right? You know, a child can pretty much just memorize that, not actually read that. And if the picture and the text is simple enough, it's so predictable. They're going to be able to say, I like to kick, I like to jump. But what happens when the predictable pattern text disappears? What happens when the pictures disappear, right? All of that scaffold has just completely been pulled out from under them because they don't have the phonics skills, those core skills to support their reading as an independent, emergent, and early reader. So I've seen the value of phonics skills in the classroom, definitely.
Was it a hard shift for you to make? Like, how did you come to learn about the, you know, value or to try out a different way of instruction? I mean, how'd you even come to know about all that?
Great question. So I always had a sound ball in my classroom. I thought, you know, we're doing these level texts and that's fine. And those are the materials that we were given as teachers. And I thought, oh, you know, I'm still going to teach core phonics skills along with that. But I didn't have like a scope and sequence, you know, it was very specific to teach this and teach this when and in this order. And I was grateful to have been part of training within the school board when they brought in core phonics skills and a curriculum that every single elementary teacher, kindergarten through second grade, was using the same core phonics curriculum. And I loved it because I saw that it was yielding results for children as readers, right? The ones who seemed to be, you know, in quotes, reading for a little while. But then when the pattern text disappeared and the pictures disappeared, then they felt stuck. Then it seemed like, well, why can't they read? Because they seem to be doing fine. But as you said, maybe that wasn't actually truly decoding or reading, but it was more guessing and going along with those predictable patterned texts. Now, it was a big shift because leveled reading had been, you know, ongoing for years. And now we were, you know, learning about phonemic awareness. And that wasn't a term prior to this core phonics instruction that even, you know, experienced teachers had been introduced to. It's something, you know, you learn, right? So again, grateful for the training, but it was definitely a shift. It certainly was. And I'm so grateful the shift was made and absolutely love the direction and the decodable texts for early readers.
My journey, I feel like, is very similar. I had done a lot of research on my own, but then we did make the switch as a district to get a core phonics curriculum aligned K-2. And it was scripted. And I was thinking, okay, you know, this is a lot of moving pieces. This is long to, you know, very long. Let me see. First of all, I got in 13 of it. it wasn't as complicated as I thought. It just looked at first, but then it really like was a systematic routine. But it was the results that had me blown away. And I'm like, okay, I'm hooked. This is it. Like, this is what's been missing. So you said in your core phonics instruction, you had to learn a lot about phonemic awareness, and the other teachers in your school had to learn about phonemic awareness. How did that influence your small groups? Because the phonics curriculum is usually whole group, right? But we still want to be doing some work in small groups. So how did that shift your small group work?
Yeah, what a great question. It certainly shifted my small group instruction. Before, with the whole language system, I would just grab another level reader, level B, level C. Mm-hmm. And, you know, level A, level B were fine. And then level C, there were just more words on the page. And that seemed to be where children really got stuck in reading. And it's like, why can't they read this? They could read level A and level B. Well, it's because if they haven't been taught words that end with ing and they haven't been taught consonant blends, how would I expect them to read the words on the page when it's not so simple and not so predictable anymore? So instead of grabbing another bag of leveled readers off the shelf, hoping that they would be able to read and get through this book, I was able to pinpoint the exact phonics skill that they had a gap in. Either they needed to see it one more time, they needed to practice reading that skill one more time, perhaps like an R controlled vowel, AR spells R, ER spells R, IR spells R, et cetera. So we could really pinpoint the phonics skill, and you can use a simple checklist, or you can give a dictation, I guess, you know, different words with different phonics skills to get a baseline. But we could really target and go back to like, this lesson covers the TH digraph. This lesson covers the R controlled vowel. This lesson covers superhero silent E with the long A vowel sound. So it was very targeted, very intentional phonics teaching. We weren't covering skills that the child could already perform, read and spell, but we could identify the gaps in their phonics instruction and really target those in small group reading. It was much more intense, targeted learning that yielded outcomes more quickly.
Yeah, that jump from B to C was always like, knock your head against the wall, like, what is going on?
So you experienced that as well.
Absolutely. And once I started understanding, my eyes were opened and I'm like, of course we can't expect them to read those words. We haven't taught them the rules of any of those words. And I would get so mad. Even in the A books, I'm like, of course you can't read that because that says toy. And why would you know O-Y says oy, you know?
Exactly.
So I'm like, of course you're going to fail. And this is annoying. But I think there's a lot of shifts happening. And one shift, I feel like teachers need almost permission to be flexible with what those small groups look like. That it doesn't have to be hand out a book and everyone reads it the same. It can be that. But you can add phonics work into those small groups during reading time. And like I think you were getting at, it follows a progression of development. So you can figure out where are they in that development. Okay, this is the skill they need to work on. And then the key magic that I think you're talking about is you can find a decodable book that works on that skill. And then you can read that book together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Like that's where it all just, that phonics work comes together and blends with the reading work and boom, magic.
Yes, it's all very specific to a particular phonics skill. So the decodable text that we are expecting students to read is directly tied to the instruction, the practice, the spelling, the reading on a whiteboard that we had just led them through.
And let's talk about the flexibility with what our small groups look like. I get asked this question all the time. What are your must-haves for kindergarten? And so I'm wondering, thinking about changing up how we do our groups, like what are your must-haves for kindergarten reading small groups?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So must-haves as far as materials,
yes.
would be some magnetic alphabet letters organized on a tray. Now, if you're teaching very beginning kindergarten or pre-K, I wouldn't put all 26 alphabet letters on a tray. I would give them only the group of letters that you're expecting them to work with. So if we're at the very beginning of the year and we've just learned the sounds like the letter M, AST, just give them those four letters to start manipulating and to start recognizing and becoming familiar with. So also whiteboards, whiteboard markers, there's kids don't have to erase. It's much faster when they make a mistake. It's very easy to, you know, show them how proper letter formation, because when you're teaching children how to properly form the letters, let's get that under our belt. And then it's just quick recall later on. We're not still thinking how to form the letter. So that's important for small group instruction. And also, you know, a decodable text, something that matches the letters and sounds that you're working on, and can be very simple. Like when you're, a sentence can be very simple, right? Like at the beginning, it can be, I sit, I sat, Matt sat. Those children are reading and they've only learned four or five letter sounds. It's incredible. They're already blending those sounds into words. If a child can blend sounds to read a word, he or she can read a sentence, as simple as it may be. And that's really exciting to see. So those are my must-haves for small group instruction: magnetic letters, whiteboard, whiteboard marker, decodable text. And of course, there's a little picture box, which can actually be something for a child to demonstrate their comprehension of a very simple text. And it's a great early finisher activity if you need to spend a little more time with a child who's reading more slowly.
That's a great tip, because you always have that kid in the group and you're like, okay, reread, everyone go reread. So that's a great tip to have. If you have the whiteboard right there, hey, draw what the book was about, draw something you liked about the book. Great. Easy. Mm-hmm. Is there a specific phonics activity that your students love or that you love doing with your students?
Yeah, so there are some great phonics activities out there. And I know that Ziva, you have a TPT store yourself, mm-hmm. and you have some great activities for teachers and, you know, even homeschool families. I know there are homeschool families looking for phonics activities.
Absolutely.
That teachers pay teachers as well. So you have some great things on there. I like Phonics Bump. Now, this is a game with a little natural friendly competition built in. So it keeps students engaged so that teacher friend, you can finally lead your small group without being interrupted. And the materials are very simple. It's print and play. You print the game board and you can use cubes, like the little set of cubes you already have in your classroom. Add a few dice or a printable spinner and a little paper clip for spinning. And you and your students are all set to play. So these lessons in Phonics Bump are aligned to YouFly. They're YouFly aligned, specific to the lesson you're working on. So if you're working on lesson 10 in your UFI lessons, I have a bump game, a phonics bump game for that lesson. It includes the phonics skill that you're working on, as well as the one or two sight words that might be in the lesson. So that's something fun that you can do. And of course, we need student accountability. So I do have a little spelling recording sheet you may choose to use or not use with, you know, early kindergarten students, but it's there as a little form of accountability and a little spelling practice for students while they're playing the game. So they roll the dice and they read the word. And if the partner listens, so it's a partner activity, and they read the word correctly, they put a little cube on. If they spin the same word again, they stack two cubes and the Tower of Two locks their word and can't be taken. But if the partner rolls the dice and they just have one cube on the square, then their partner can bump them off and put their cube there. So that is the fun, the little competition built in. And I find kids ask for that game again and again. So phonics for sure.
I have to be honest, I've used bump in math and I have never thought about it for phonics. And I don't know why now, but I think we're on the same wavelength, because I am all about finding a game that you can teach the directions once, but change out the skill as kids master that skill. And
yes,
that's what it sounds like this is. You teach them bump once, but then you change out the board game to go along with the week of the lesson that you're on.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is a perfect, huge classroom management tip, because like you said, then kids are engaged. If they know what to do, they can be independent, they can be engaged, they won't be bothering you and interrupting your small group.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, it could be used as a reading center, or it could be used as a whole class partner activity for, you know, say 12, 15 minutes, something like that. So, yeah.
And you don't have to spend 10 minutes introducing it every week as a brand new center or finding new centers each week. I mean, this is like bringing me back to my first year of, you know, staying till 6 p.m. because I was looking for new things to do every week. And then I'd have to teach them every single new thing because it was always different. And I know the error of my ways now. It doesn't have to be like that.
Oh, and Ziba, I was so much like that as a beginning teacher as well. I mean, I would spend my summers, you know, fighting and preparing and having all the things ready well ahead of time. So yes, yeah, now I'm a little more streamlined for sure.
Yeah, it's a work smarter, not harder, but it works for what's best for kids too. Like it's best for them in terms of getting to actually benefit from that practice because they're able to do it.
Yeah. And they're reading, they're spelling, they have that social interaction that we crave. You know, if we're going to have students talking, let's have them talking about reading and spelling and writing along with that social interaction. So,
okay, last question, independent reading or partner reading? What do you like best with your students?
So when we began the direct phonics instruction, of course, we as teachers were encouraged to have children read aloud to each other these decodable texts, these short passages. And what a great activity. What a great activity. Because when you're silent reading, that works for the children who can actually read and write, understand what they're reading and get, you know, engrossed in a good story. For children for whom reading is a struggle during silent reading, what are they doing? Probably flipping through the book and looking at pictures. Now, you could argue that that is a form of reading, but is it? Are they actually decoding text? Are they actually decoding words? Or is that reading out loud practice more beneficial? So I think silent reading or just having a quiet reading time in your classroom is a beautiful thing. I think it's just a really nice reset for students and the teacher, but make sure that we are incorporating those reading aloud to a partner because it's forcing, right, even your reluctant readers in the classroom to practice the decoding, to practice that phonic skill, right? If they're not asked to practice, then actually blend those sounds out loud to read a word, they haven't got the practice that they likely need on that phonic skill.
I think it's a key distinction to make, and if you're not familiar with kindergarten, or if you're new to kindergarten, silent reading is just pretty much impossible in kindergarten in general. And I think it's kind of unrealistic to expect kindergartners to be silent. Like, you know, there were years in my early years where I thought that was the expectation because that's what I was hearing from admin, curriculum people, you know, that they want to come in and it should be quiet. But 5-year-olds don't really have an inner voice yet. So they can't hear in their head what they're reading, but also like, how do we know what the whole point is to sound it out. So they have to be able to hear the sounds and they can't do that in their head. So I think in general, teachers, if you're listening and you're thinking my kids are never silent, that's okay. I don't think they should be. I teach my kids to whisper read when it's like reading on their own, but you're right. That partner time is so valuable because they can read aloud to each other, with each other, get that feedback from each other, and even talk about the book.
I like what you said, Ziba, that 5-year-olds don't have an inner voice yet. I think that's really important. That is a gold nugget from an experienced kindergarten educator like yourself for new teachers who may be listening, that 5-year-olds don't have an inner voice yet, so we can't expect them to look at a book and ingest. Right, their lips are always moving if you watch them. Even when you ask them, it's very difficult and maybe just not even developmentally appropriate at that stage. So
that's for all the admin out there too, doing classroom observations. But yeah, if you notice, like even the kids they'll be making noises and I've started saying, do you know that you're making noise with your mouth? Or I hear your mouth is making noise. And they most, like it's not always a behavior of trying to be disruptive. I don't think they even know some of the times that their mouth is making noise. And I have a distinct memory, fun fact, of being a kindergartner on the bus humming away to a song that I loved and not realizing that people could hear me humming and having someone call me out on humming. And I didn't know that people could hear me. I really didn't. So I remember that as a kid.
Oh, no.
But I'm sure how you learn. That's how you learn is people say, oh, I don't know if you know this, but your mouth is making noise right now. Yeah. Okay. So you have a literacy podcast to help teachers, parents, homeschool parents, to help anyone specifically teaching kids about phonics skills. So where can people find you and throw in there what inspired you to start the podcast?
Yeah. So the best place to find me online is at the podcast. So it's Phonics Rules for Kids. And you can also find me at phonicsrulesforkids.com online. I'd love to have you pop over and pop your earbuds in and have a listen. And what inspired me to start the podcast in the first place? I have, as a teacher, I've talked to parents of struggling readers, and their biggest challenge is knowing how to actually help their child read at home without, you know, sometimes you're sitting there as a parent and you're willing your child to say the next word. But if you say it for them, they're not reading, they're not practicing that decoding. So how can we help as educators, as teachers, how can we help parents know how to help their child read at home? So I thought, if I can, you know, share with parents what I as a trained teacher know, you know, in simple terms, just simple phonics skills, simple decoding strategies, then I thought that would be a way that I could help families. And also with the rise of homeschoolers out there, it seemed that maybe that would be a way that I could share what I know to help those families as well.
Awesome. So I guess if you are listening and you are wanting a quick nugget of a phonics tip, I think we know Melanie's definitely the expert we can go to and listen to her podcast. So definitely give her a listen and definitely reach out to either one of us if you loved the episode. We'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode. Thanks so much for listening to the Kindergarten Cafe podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for more information and resources, or just head straight to kindergartencafe.org for all the goodies. If you liked this episode, the best ways to show your support are to subscribe, leave a review, or send it to a friend. I'll be back next week with even more kindergarten tips. See you then.